Support for Boston Public Radio comes from the Office of the Massachusetts State Treasurer. The Unclaimed Property Division is holding unclaimed funds from utility bills, uncashed paychecks, savings accounts, and more. To see if you have unclaimed money, you can visit findmassmoney.gov.
And Owens Corning of New England, helping homeowners create living space using the Owens Corning basement finishing system for over 20 years. More information at ocboston.com.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marge Regan live from our GBH studio at the Boston Public Library. Beef, it's what's for dinner. Or not. When it comes to semantics, it turns out the stakes are high. Cattle ranchers have a bone to pick. I hope you're picking up on all this, Marjorie.
I am, Jim.
Have a bone to pick with the alternative meat industry, and they're urging legislators to pass laws that make it illegal to label food meat if it's grown in the lab or made from vegetables. And the war of words, Marjorie, doesn't stop there.
Uh-huh.
The USDA just upgraded pink slime, that's what it's called, to a, it's not funny, to a ground beef. But is that what you should call it if it's been turned into a highly processed paste? Joining us for his take on this, how sexual harassment is getting the silent treatment in the hospitality industry, and other headlines about food policy and food culture is Corby Kummer. Corby's a senior editor at The Atlantic, award-winning food writer, and a senior lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition and Policy. Hello there, Corby.
Well, hello there.
Did Marjorie destroy your employment at Tufts after the last week's show, or did that work out okay?
I just taught my class. Nobody has squirted me off the premises,
okay.
But we're going to have to see later.
So that's a good sign, actually.
Okay. Well, we're going to ruin somebody's day by discussing this pink slime deal that we can have food, meat. And it's really not meat because it's mostly fat and slimy.
All right, so the minute you start seeing what goes into the sausage, you don't like it. So in slaughterhouses, they try to use every bit of the beef. You know, if it's an artisanal French butcher, you say everything but the oink. How wonderfully economical they are. Mm-hmm. But if it's a big slaughterhouse that's a factory assembly line, and they take all the fatty trimmings, they throw it into a centrifuge, they centrifuge off the fat so they know that it's just lean that's left, then they sell the fat as tallow, and they put this lean, finely textured beef. That's the name of pink slime. They're able to, they spray it with ammonia, which sounds very appetizing.
I often
it?
Get a side order of ammonia with my
It's a common disinfectant used as a gas, and it washes away from the meat. So they disinfect it, and then they can add it to ground beef, and they can control the fat content, they can control the meat texture. Everything was going along great until in 2012, ABC News did this documentary, which was horrifying, and they showed what it looks like. It's this gross, fatty paste. Any picture of the inside of a slaughterhouse floor is very gross.
Why is it any grosser than the fat that's already mixed into ground beef to begin with? It's just a higher percentage than that. It's the same stuff.
It's all the same thing. It just looks white, pasty, and horrible, and it horrified consumers. And the factory that went, its orders went from $5 million a month to a little over $1 million a month in the wake of this ABC News. They sued ABC News for like over $1 billion. And so far, it's estimated they've had $177 million in payout from ABC News, which admitted no wrongdoing except the damage to the brand.
So just to be clear, so what's happening? The FDA
is
now saying?
It's back in business. Okay. I mean, it's not only back in business, they can call it meat. The USDA has regulated they can call it meat.
Well, hold on. I'm just a little bit confused. So if you go into the supermarket and you're looking at the ground beef,
right?
How do you know what's the pink slime?
You don't.
You absolutely don't. You never did. And now they have ruled after a thorough six-month review. It's been 6 years. It's been 7 years, 2012, since this ABC News expose. But they've actually ruled that it can be called ground beef, which is what the industry wanted.
Okay. So if you go to a place like Whole Foods, which is supposed to have higher grades of meat than the grazing, you know, not tortured animals and all that kind of stuff, is the pink slime there too? I mean, is it everywhere?
No, but that has nothing to do with humane treatment. That's just the question of how
that's why I'm asking.
It's how it's processed.
Yeah.
They probably say we don't use pink slime or lean texture, finely ground beef. They can say it if they want, but they are absolutely not required to say it.
Okay, so we just don't know.
We just don't know.
You know, speaking of labeling, though, last night...
And that's just great.
I was reading my March edition of Beef Magazine, which I come to the house.
Cattle
I think
Rancher
it's
Quarterly.
Every couple of months. There is such a thing. I just learned that this morning. Beef Magazine. I have to say, I'm almost shocked that I am about it. I'm on the side of the cattle ranchers with this one. They are really upset saying that all, like the Impossible Burger, what's all this crap? You know, the
Beyond
I shouldn't
meat.
Say that. The things that are not meat that they call meat, vegetable things, which some people think taste very good. I am not amongst them. That the Cattle Ranchers Association is basically saying there should be a law that says it is not meat. Meat comes from a living thing. Now, that's going to give them a problem in terms of lab-created meat, which really, I guess, sort of is meat. But aren't they right in terms of the... It's almost deceiving the public. Call it what it is. Yes? No?
Okay. So, having spent 3 hours at the headquarters of Beyond Meat on Friday afternoon in Los Angeles, tasting their new products, because I... 4 years ago, as they were just starting, was in their much smaller, more modest headquarters. They're now in Carl's Jr. They're selling like gangbusters. Their product is vastly improved. It really, several people in the room whom I know very well, because like one of them I'm married to, could not tell the difference between that and me.
Really?
Yeah, it's a hamburger. Yeah, and it's what they've done is they've upped the gristle. So they're much better at the texture, and they themselves...
Why would they up the gristle?
Because it was like pasty before, and boy, is ground meat gristly the minute you taste it. It just is. And they have a good char on it. It's a much better flavor. They themselves refer to the days when I first saw them in 2014 as the veggie burger days. Mm. And in the article I wrote for MIT's Technology Review, I quoted Nathan Mervold, the great technology guru, as saying, why bother to make a slightly better tofurkey? And they now have, from my piece, slightly better tofurkey, big and framed, because that's what they were aiming to improve.
First of all, when's that on the market? Before we get back to the question about labeling, is that on the market
already? Beyond Meat is absolutely
on the market. No, the latest incarnation. Is that on?
It's right now on the
market.
But, yeah. But it tastes like a cheeseburger.
But it shouldn't be called meat because it's not, right?
All right. So it's should you have prevented soy milk and almond milk from using the word milk? What the meat industry is trying to do is get out ahead of this and say milk. Dairy, they lost it. They lost control. We don't want to lose control of this story. The argument now for the cute "my almond doesn't lactate" argument, which none other than Scott Gottlieb, the commissioner of the FDA, said with a wink, is the rejoinder to that is consumers who buy almond milk don't think they're getting milk from a cow. They know perfectly well it's a substance that resembles milk. But just like pornography, I know it when I see it. They know when they see soy and almond milk, it's not dairy milk. That's going to become the case with these plant substitutes for meat, I think.
So just one thing before we move on. So you were there for 3 hours. You tested the Beyond Meat, said it tasted pretty good. So does it look like a cheeseburger, too? Like it might be a little pink in the middle?
Absolutely.
Or if you have it more,
and they have, well, of course, that's the whole point of these beet extracts that add the juice to it. And Impossible says that it is synthesized heme, which is also red, from a vegetable protein.
Can you really not tell the difference? I went in so open-minded on what's the Impossible thing called? What's it called? Impossible?
Just Impossible Burger.
I really tried to have an open mind, and I thought it was okay. And you know who turned me around? I went to Clover. I bought one. I brought it into Marjorie the next day, and she literally could not swallow. And it caused me to reassess. And it's fine.
Well, it's like those horrible tofurkey things.
It's not... It's something else. It's fine, but it is something else. I don't mean that it's constitutionally something else. Obviously, it is, but it doesn't taste the same.
No, I completely go for that. I'm kind of in the business. For some reason, I like knocking Impossible. And I think it tastes greasy, like vegetable fat, like coconut oil, even though it doesn't have coconut in it. I thought it tasted artificial.
So you think Beyond Meat is superior?
Yeah, much.
It is. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to try it. We're talking to Corby Kummer, our food guy.
So tell us about Panera, the bread place, food place, lunch place, coffee place. They had these six pay-what-you-can stores.
Panera
now,
Cares.
The only one left is the one in Boston.
And that's going to
go. Not for long.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like the tragedy of the commons, the idea that if people would come in and decide, I'm going to pay what full value would be for this meal or more because I believe in subsidizing this noble project, because the people who couldn't afford it could either pay nothing or pay much less. And what Panera was saying was, in Clayton, Missouri, where we opened our first one and subsequent ones in Chicago and a few other cities, including Boston, the concerned customers outweigh, and it all evens out. We don't lose money on this because we have so many charitable customers. But the personnel didn't like it. All of the needles they had to clean up and from
the
bathroom.
Is that really what it was?
It was needles. It was general filth. It was consumers complaining that they didn't want to be next to the homeless. This wasn't a soup kitchen.
Oh, Jesus.
It didn't work out. And this kind of mixing of genuinely poor people and those who could afford it right in downtown Crossing, which is where they opened it, should have worked, and it didn't. And it's a really sad
story.
So
it wasn't about the bottom line. You're convinced it wasn't about the bottom line.
They're saying that they were losing money, and it was also about the bottom line, but it was mostly about the complaints from both the customers and the staff.
Okay, speaking of complaints, can we talk about another franchise kind of thing? And, you know, it's unfortunate that didn't work out. Marjorie and I were comparing notes when her kids were young and when my kids were young, and I think the consensus of both of us, when our kids were single digits, if we had to choose between being waterboarded or going to Chuck E. Cheese, we would have chosen the waterboarding. And the reason we bring this up is I have thought about this, by the way, because I have not had a Chuck E. Cheese pizza in many a year. But even in the day when my kids were young, when you looked at the pizza, the outsides didn't match.
Hold
and
on,
I'm not an investigative
reporter. Hold on. It's not the outsides. I don't know why everybody makes such a picture about the outsides not matching. When you look at the pictures of the pepperoni pizza, there's a half a pepperoni on one piece, and there's no matching
half
on the
other
side.
One.
I mean, case closed, right? They're sticking in used pizza. Look at the am I right?
The theory is that they are employing pre-used pizza.
Yes, I am.
That essentially, if you leave
right
a slice
at
Chuck E. Cheese, they insert it into another pie.
Okay, look at this. Where's
Margie,
the other half
this
of that?
Is radio.
Where's
you
the
know
other
that?
Half of that pepperoni?
No, I'm serious.
It's not there.
Okay,
why don't you show it to the audience at home?
In the Washington Post that had social media postings of sliced Chuck E. Cheese pizza to see if the outsides matched and if the slices of pepperoni matched. And they kind of do. What the meme that has begun is, look, they're recycling used pizzas.
They are recycling used pizza. Not used, uneaten pizza from a prior customer are getting slipped in to the pizzas. Yes, they are.
You're feeding into this fake
I am feeding
news,
into
Jim
this.
Browdy. No,
Marjorie, this is still radio.
I'm showing it to Corby. Look at
well, how
that
is that helpful to the people
right
at home?
There. There's no other piece on the other side.
Uh-huh,
if that were not...
They match okay on that
look
one. It's
this,
not a good
this.
Example.
Look at that, Corby.
This.
Can you look at that, please?
Yeah, I'm looking at
what
it.
What do you
and
think?
What I can say is it matches, and I don't believe that they have taken
Can I tell you, as Marjorie Egan would say...
Corby needs new glasses.
I would say it's a scandal, as Marjorie would say.
Scandal. It's an outrage. It's a vision of hell. That's what Chuck E. Cheese is. You know that, Corby Kummer. And this is adding to the problem.
The real problem would be, of course, sanitation. I mean, it's against every sanitation law to take something that came back from a customer and palm it off as new. However, as far as food waste goes, there's a lot to say for it. But I don't believe it's happening.
And by the way, what is the basis for your lack of belief that it is? You have no basis for it. Is that correct?
Because neither of us has been back in those kitchens to see. Have you, Jim?
Look at the photographs. Marjorie is right. You look at the photographs. They are mismatched slices of pizza.
Mismatched. It's very suspicious, Corby.
Okay, let's move on. Can we move on to
Heaven knows what you're going to be believing next week.
You know,
this is a terrible story.
What's the headline of
insect,
that?
Insect
no, no, no.
Apocalypse.
The headline in the New York Times thing about climate change, time to panic, you were talking about
panic
before.
Panic time or something like
this
that.
This is another time. There's a really powerful and scary piece about what the term they use, which I hadn't heard before, is the insect apocalypse. And they're talking about how essentially it breed, if that's the proper terminology, breed after breed of insect is becoming extinct at an incredibly rapid race.
Right, 50 years.
And what the consequences are for food and the climate should that proceed apace.
Listen to this line. In 10 years, a quarter less insects than we have now. 50 years, only half left. In 100 years, all gone, if this guy's right. But he might be another pepperoni imposter.
Yeah, well, he's going to have company with Jim. So This is a very scary story about the possible disappearance of insects. We've all seen the mysterious and horrifying bee collapse, bee colony collapse. And why is it important? Because almond trees, which don't lactate as we remember, have to be pollinated. They have to have bees, or else they have to be hand done. There's not enough hand labor ever to go around. And there's all insects contribute to the replenishing of soil. Animals eat them. They recycle nutrients. We cannot do without insects, and the earth cannot do without them. Here's what the apocalypse Armageddon will look like. A flowerless world with silent forests, a world of dung and old leaves and rotting carcasses accumulating in cities and road size, a world of collapse or decay and erosion and loss that would spread through ecosystems. So why? Global warming, pesticide use, unregulated pesticide use, and invasive species which can fend off the insects and aren't of any use to them.
You know, well, that language, that quote you read, it sounds hyperbolic. It's only hyperbolic if the underlying facts are untrue. But if the facts are true, and we are seeing the disappearance of insect species after insect species, that is the future, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. And it requires heavier regulation of pesticide use because there's now this horrible mechanism of glyphosate, which is Roundup.
I don't know what that is. What is it?
Glyphosate Roundup has been found to disorient bees. So as one of my students recently said, the poor little guys can't find their way back to the nest. And that's one of the reasons the bees are collapsing, because their neurons are meddled with when they feed off flowers that have had glyphosate, the most commonly used pesticide.
There have been terrible stories about landscapers getting cancer. Or getting other diseases.
Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That's what the association is, and that there was a story about that just last week. But it's a better proven link to the bee disorder and their terrible disorientation.
So we're supposed to, when we go to buy flowers in the springtime, and you would know this better than I, but there are some places that have heavily pesticide annuals and some that don't. You have to ask. Isn't that what you're supposed to do now?
And you definitely should ask, because you might remember there was black fungus in tomatoes about 5-6 years ago in New England, and they were being spread by Home Depot tomato plants. That when people, they had a fungus in them that was getting into people's ground and contaminating the soil of other regular growers like Sienna Farms.
You know, can we talk about the politics of this just for a second? I think we know that the president is a climate change denier, or however you want to describe him. And on the fossil fuel industry is obviously on his side on that issue. I don't understand why the industries that would suffer as a result, which probably are persuasive in Trump world, why are they not issuing a call saying this is time to panic on this front because we're decades away should this insect apocalypse continue from ruination? Why are they not doing something?
That's a good question. Second, there have to be more definitive linkages, as there have been with honeybees and colony collapse disorder and glyphosate disorienting them. I don't know what the other direct links are, and industry so far has been affected only by honeybees, which they need for fruit and for nuts. But until they see a direct effect on their bottom line, why should they bother?
We're talking to Corby Kummer, our food guy. Now, we wanted to discuss with you the fact that despite when Amazon purchased Whole Foods telling us the prices were going to go down, the only reason we are bringing up this story is not because it's untrue, but because it gives us another opportunity to mention the headline in the New York Post the other day when... Did you see a headline in the New York Post?
Which
it's
one?
It's unforgettable.
Bezos exposes Pecker. Oh, yeah. And, of course, Pecker would be the head of AMI, which owns the National Enquirer.
Right.
And so that really isn't what we're talking about today, but I wanted to get that
could. What does that have to do
every
with Whole
week,
Foods?
No,
well, because Amazon bought Whole Foods.
Oh, Amazon.
And Bezos
Amazon. Okay.
So the story is that we were promised. The public was told that with Amazon's purchase of Whole Foods, that a lot of the Amazon low price traditions were going to infect Whole Foods. But in fact, it appears that for hundreds and hundreds of items, the prices have gone up. So is this like a bait and switch kind of thing or what?
Whoever believes businesses that when they say they consolidate, they're going to have more choice and lower prices. It's always less choice and higher prices, and that's exactly what's happening with Amazon and Whole Foods. They're now a monopoly. They can do whatever they want with prices, and a lot of their contracts on 700 products have expired, and Whole Foods isn't renewing them. So Amazon is going to decide what vendors it wants to use, and it will price things exactly as they want. So recently, 550 products went up, some by 10 cents, some by as much as a few dollars. The average price hike, said the Wall Street Journal this week, actually, has been 66 cents, which certainly adds up if you're doing a full grocery. It's 66 cents on an average purchase. That's a lot, and they can do whatever they want.
You know what else? We're all supposed to bring our phones now into Whole Foods because you're supposed to sign up on the Whole Foods thing and you have the little app and they put the scanner over that. You never get anything off.
Oh, that is totally untrue.
I never get anything off. It's not like CVS where you go
the
and you get...
The most I've gotten is $1.50.
Yeah,
I saved $2.40 on my chicken wings for the Super Bowl.
Okay.
So much so that I went to another Whole Foods and saved another $2, and it made
my
day.
Okay, that was unusual.
By the way,
How
is Whole Foods doing in the Amazon era? I don't know. How are they doing since Amazon took over? How's their bottom line?
Know the bottom line because there's so many things that Amazon is doing to it, like they're turning them into home delivery centers. They've changed their distribution methods. I don't know that the results are in yet, or I haven't seen them released. But there's something else that you should remember, Marjorie.
What's
when
that?
You fire up that ad,
yeah.
That app, yeah. Hoping that you're going to get more than 40 cents or 35 cents, which is our average savings, unlike Jim. They're tracking your progress through the aisles, and they will serve you up an ad. If you're at an end cap across from the milk, they'll say, why don't you turn around and look at the special we have on Tide? So it's very spooky because they know exactly where you are.
Well, what proves what Corby is saying is I got a text the other day from Jeff Bezos saying that I should not bring a folding chair to the hot bar ever again because I basically set up shop there and stay. You know, we talked a lot with you, Corby, on a much more serious note at the time of Mario Batali and that demented apology in which, what did he include, a recipe for pizza, cinnamon rolls or something, whatever the hell it is.
Dough, yeah.
And obviously, the
lovely salt sweet combo.
The conventional wisdom, and the great Anthony Bourdain told us the same thing when he was here last in November about the restaurant industry probably being the worst of the worst when it came to Me Too. And Marjorie, I read a story this morning suggesting that after an initial blip, nothing has changed. In fact, in many ways, things have gotten worse. Do you buy
so
that?
I love this story and I hate this story.
How so?
I love it because it's so well written and because it's telling an important truth. And it's written by Brett Anderson in the New Orleans Times-Picayune, who broke the whole story in the first place. It was his piece about John Besh October.
That's right.
That broke open the whole Me Too moment for restaurants. What's happening now in his city of New Orleans and Besh's city of New Orleans? A guy from Sucre, a lovely pastry shop I frequent when I'm in New Orleans, very successful. It's got airport locations, several downtown locations, was quietly resigned from his CEO post last August because of so many years of complaints of sexual harassment, telling women who would sometimes have consensual relationships, you're going to get me in big trouble and you cannot talk about this. But what's the worst part of it is the company has not apologized for it. It's obfuscating non-apology language about this, and women are starting to fear, I'm only going to lose out and I won't be employable if I am a whistleblower and I talk about what happened to me. It's the way women felt for years. There's been a moment when women felt, now is the time to speak up. I will be protected. But now there's this awful chilling effect. And Brett quoted women in New Orleans saying, I'm now known as a complainer and troublemaker.
Yeah.
I'm moving away from this city.
You know, can we get back to Whole Foods, though? Because they play a role in this story, too. Sucre, is that how you say that?
Yeah.
Part of the problem is not just the industry itself, but that other entities which depend upon the industry decide that they'll take the unprincipled route. For example, from what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, Whole Foods is a major purchaser of Sucre things. And I think when John Mackey was asked about it, he said something
it
like...
It wasn't John Mackey. It was some spokesperson. And what they said was...
The quality
well,
of the
we
product.
Don't know anything about their. We don't know anything about their practices, and we don't want to harm all the good employees who work for Sucre, which is always the problem. Do you harm all the people who are feeding their families because they had this bad apple at the top? But then the bad apple resigns. Is he still making money? And all he did was give up his title and name. John Besh has now been forced out of a business because he tried to hide himself. But various, I think, customers of the restaurant, corporate customers, said Besh has got to be completely out of it.
You know, there were reports, I don't know, a few months ago, that after only a few months after the pizza roll cinnamon recipe, that Batali was trying to get back in. Is that true, or was that...
There was reports by Kim Severson in the Times
That's
about the various
it.
Women he'd been talking to about women running businesses that aren't food. Maybe I can get back into charitable work. And then New York Magazine... just last month or within the past 6 weeks, did a very telling profile of how he probably never can get back into certainly the food business and tracked him down to Michigan where he lives.
Hmm. Corby Kammer, thank you very much.
Pleasure, Corby. Nice
As
to
always.
See you.
As always. Corby Kammer joins us every week. He's senior editor at The Atlantic, an award-winning food writer, and a senior lecturer at Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition and Policy. Thanks again. Corby. Up next, we look at the Mueller investigation with legal analyst Michael Zeldin, who also is the husband of my dear friend from college. Amy.
That's what I'm interested in. Forget the legal stuff.
Michael Zeldin is next on 89.7 WGBH, live from our WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library.